Why have you decided that you want to be a member of the Lee County Board of Supervisors?
Well, after running for state representative and realized that Dave Heaton is going to be the state representative of this district as long as he wants the job, because Henry County really likes Dave Heaton, I decided my best thing to do was look for something else in politics to do. And I chose the Board of Supervisors because first I was looking at the Senate race, but three people had already announced they were running for this Senate District 42. And then I had talked to Steve Ireland, and he said he would be the fourth one. And Steve had told me that the doctors had cleared him, that his cancer was in remission, and this might be his last chance to do something like this. So I told Steve, I said, well, out of respect for you and all you've done for Fort Madison and Lee County, I would just stay out of the Senate race, but I wanted to stay involved. And so since Larry Cruzy was running for the Senate, this was an open seat on the supervisors, and so I decided, well, I would stay involved by running for the first district on the Board of Supervisors, and maybe with 4 years of experience on the board, you know, then we could see after that. Right now, I really don't know if I'd be interested in the state Senate anymore. I think that there's a lot to do on the Board of Supervisors. There's a lot of issues that are currently on the table, and who knows what will come up in the future. But I think my experience being in business for 26 years and also being mayor for 6 years, balancing six budgets, and always have said that I balance the budgets without raising taxes and without cutting services. And I think a lot of times government gets into things that gets them in debt that they should not be in. Let private enterprise do what they do and let government do what they're supposed to do. And so I want to take this experience to the Board of Supervisors along with the many other things I've done and see if we can keep a handle on property taxes. Everybody is always says this, but a lot of times they find it difficult to do once they get involved. But I think being successful in business proves I know how to run a business, and being successful as mayor, the two together will do me well as a county supervisor for the first district.
What do you see as the biggest challenge facing the first district, a very rural district, kind of the northern stretch of Lee County here? What's the biggest challenge facing this district?
I think the biggest challenge right now is trying to get our unemployment rate down. We are one of the highest, if not the highest, county in the state of Iowa in unemployment. When you have the state sitting there at about 6.5% unemployment and we're sitting there over 10, that tells you that there's something really wrong with what's going on, especially when we have so much to offer. I think one of the biggest things that Ken Hendricks told me back when Hendricks Industry was going to come to Lee County, he said, you have the greatest asset with the Mississippi River right here, he says, and you're not taking full advantage of it. And he was using that as an example because he says, in most business, the cost of transporting your product is one of the most expensive. And he said, doing it by semi is the most expensive, by rail is the next. But he says, by river, he says, it costs you one-tenth the amount to transport product to market as it does by semi. So he says, if you can attract industry here that needs to get their product to market, especially overseas, they can show them a huge savings. And that alone, he says, is what really can make the difference between a successful company and one who has trouble. Because a lot of times it isn't the cost of the product that is so high, it's the cost of getting the product to the markets that, you know, want to use it, especially if you're going overseas. So I think we need to look greater into that. When we're looking at companies, you got to show the company how they will benefit from moving here. Don't talk about how much you'll benefit, because that's not their issue. Their issue is, what's in it for me? And I think that we need to utilize that a lot more and do what Ken Hendricks suggested. And so that is just one of the things. The big other big thing, you know, and we all know that agriculture is by far the biggest industry in Iowa and probably in Lee County. And so I think whenever we can do successful in agriculture and make them better, that benefits everybody.
What can the board do to help even local ag businesses or potential ag businesses? What can the Board of Supervisors do to help in that process?
I think when it comes to doing that, it's showing leadership. When it comes to saying, okay, and who knows, you know, we're talking right now about the facility in Green Bay, you know, with the anhydrous ammonia plant and stuff, which has a lot of controversy to it. I've talked to people who are for it, and I've talked to people who are against it. The majority of them that are against it, of course, are in the Weaver area and stuff, you know, and I think they got very legitimate questions that they're raising. And a lot of them feel like it's being jammed down their throat. The benefit that I hear is that 50% of our anhydrous is imported. And so that adds to the cost because they manufacture it overseas, then they ship it here. Well, they got their shipping cost. Here we go back to shipping cost. And so they end up having to charge more because you're going to pay for that shipping. So if we could manufacture it here, that could be a big boost in the savings. I was talking to a farmer here just a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me that anhydrous was running about $800 a ton. And he thought that was terrible because he said his understanding it cost about $300 a ton to manufacture it. Well, and when you get into that, then it says, okay, how much then does it cost in the transportation for that ton, you know, of anhydrous, you know, to get it here and stuff? I think that if the anhydrous plant does go through, it will actually bring the cost down dramatically. They're not going to spend $1.3 billion and not have a market. So the one thing they can do and to get farmers to use their anhydrous rather than from overseas is, well, we'll lower the price. So then when they lower the price, what happens? You have the free enterprise system that this country is built on. The ones overseas that are producing it and using us as a market aren't going to want to give up their market. So they're going to say, well, we'll show you. And, you know, they'll cut the price. And who knows where it'll all end up. And you could end up having a price war on anhydrous. And if that happens, that'll make the cost drastically go down for a farmer to put in his crop. And he'll benefit from, you know, that. Now, eventually, they're both going to want to make money. And I would say that the overseas market would have a big disadvantage. And they might look for other places for their product rather than come to the States. The other disadvantage is we need to look more into what are the waste products going to be from the production, what are the environmental impacts going to be. These are all governed by the EPA and stuff. And I know I just came back from North Dakota where they're showing a huge boom in the oil industry, and my son has been working up there for 6 years. And when I first went up there, you could smell sulfur every place. Because the crude oil up there is sour crude, which is high in sulfur. And the state of North Dakota and the state government and stuff really started saying, hey, we want you in here. We want you, you know, helping our economy. But we want it also to be safe for the residents and for the future and air pollution and stuff. This last time I went up there, which just was a week ago, They're booming so unbelievable. You can't hardly get on the highways, all the trucks that are moving, the crude oil and everything else. And I never got one whiff of sulfur. The air was actually clean. You couldn't, you know, crude oil has a certain smell too. You couldn't even smell any crude oil vapors. And so I think that there is a way to satisfy both sides. But you got to make sure that you do this in a way where it's environmentally friendly. The people in the area, you know, if they have any problems at all, they should be able to voice them and get some answers and say, okay, you clean up your act. You're not going to sit here and pump pollutants in the air and have all this odor and stuff. And so you got to get some kind of guarantees that it's also going to be safe for them. Is anything 100% safe? Of course not. I know they had a big explosion where up in North Dakota here just about a year ago where they had a big surge of liquid come through the natural gas, which they have a flaring system that shut off a huge flare, you know, and all the safety devices worked. There was no injuries. The plant never had to shut down. the safety precautions they put in for something like this happening worked. And so those people have seen a huge economic boom. The town that my son lives in is called Tioga, North Dakota. And 6 years ago, it was about 1,000 people. They don't even know how big it is. They figure it's at least 10,000 or more now. And three brand new towns have sprung up. Unemployment doesn't even really exist up there. In fact, every place you look, it's got signs help wanted. Now, I know Lee County, you know, and the First District isn't going to be in North Dakota. But my explanation is here they have this huge economic boom with some very dangerous products and some very dangerous effects, because this sulfur in the crude, whenever they hit a hydrogen pocket, well, you get H2S, and that's a poison gas. It's kind of like when you hear about guys going up in a silo and they get one breath of that silo gas and they're dead. Well, hydrogen sulfur is the same way. Only difference is that when hydrogen mixed with sulfur, it's odorless. You can't smell the sulfur. So when the workers are working around the wellheads, the pump station, refinery, they wear a hydrogen monitor. Because if it's too much hydrogen, not enough sulfur, it won't kill you. Or if it's too much sulfur, not enough either way, it'll actually, you know, it'll maybe bother you, but it won't kill you. And so anyway, the concern about the plant is a very, very real concern. Is the cost too risky for the benefits? I think we'll have to see about that. I wish it was creating more jobs than it is. There's going to be more jobs created in the construction of it than there is the operation of it. The 165 they're talking, though, is going to have a support staff, because it'll actually create more job with the transportation of the hydrogen, or the hydrogen with the anhydrous ammonia, because of getting it to the market. So it'll create jobs that aren't actually related directly to employment at the plant. But a lot of people feel that the $1.3 billion is too much of a price to pay and stuff. And their big concern is that it's a foreign company, and could they just pull out and leave us hanging? So all these things are big concern and stuff. But I think if it does go through, and, you know, it's more and more looking like the way a lot of people talk, it's already a done deal. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But I think that if that place is living up to its potential, because it's going to take, what they say, 3 to 5 years to build. So we won't know for 10 years probably whether it actually was the right or wrong thing to do. But if it does turn out to be the right thing to do, if they go through with it, I think it could be a huge economic benefit to all agriculture, not only in Lee County, Iowa, but in the whole Midwest here. Because they will be producing enough product that Iowa, Illinois, and Missouri, I'm sure, are all going to benefit from this.
When you look at, and you touched on it briefly, the incentive to get them to come here, say another business, you're on the board and another business came through and said, hey, we're interested in here, in a similar incentive package. Do you support giving that type of benefits? I believe the county is abating taxes for 20 years. Do you support that for these types of projects?
Well, what I understand, and this is just what I've been told, I'm not sure about all the accurate of these figures. I was told the first 5 years they will pay around $335 or something like that, $1,000 a year in property tax. After that 5 years, the next 5 years, they'll pay $600,000 in property tax. And then after those 10 years are up, they go to like $1.3 million. And again, you're looking at a huge amount of property taxes being paid to Lee County, which could be another benefit to all property owners, not just farmers, then, because that should help keep their property taxes down because of all the property tax coming in from this. And the way I understand, they bought 500 acres, and this is another issue that is very sensitive to people and to me too. It would be nice if they would have been able to do the 500 acres on ground that wasn't agricultural and taking it out of production, because we got a world that's starving for food, and here we take 500 acres out of production. My understanding is that the initial plant is going to take approximately 200 to 300 acres, and they'll have the rest as backup. Now, is that backup there for expansion or possible expansion? I don't know. But I don't think they would have bought 500 acres unless they thought, well, if this goes over good, you know, we're going to have room to increase production and, you know, do even more. I know another product or another thing they worry about is what happened at First Miss and all the waste that was left over after First Miss pulled out. And it's still sitting there. It's just covered with a mound of dirt. It's just a big mountain of waste covered with a couple feet of dirt. It didn't clean the problem up. It just covered it up. One of them had, what kind of waste do they have and how will it be handled and how that will all be taken care of? I think these are questions that need to be looked into, too. It would only be reasonable. So, again, right now it's such a problem because of Siemens announcing that since the tax credit on wind energy hasn't been extended, a lot of their orders are starting to be canceled, and they announced that within a couple months they're going to be laying off 400 people. Well, you know, when you look at that, it's like, wow, here we get hit again. You know, hopefully all the politics will be over by the time the presidential election on November 6th passes, and they can get back and extend that tax credit on wind energy and avert a huge amount of job loss at Siemens. I think if they extend that tax credit on wind energy, you'll see them really cutting back. I'm not saying they're going to keep all 400 people, but I don't think they would lay that many off. I just saw a survey the other day that said 20% of all the electricity manufactured in Iowa is now being manufactured under wind energy. Can you imagine what a savings that is to the electric companies? Because, yes, they have a huge initial cost of putting up the towers with the base, the blades, the generators and stuff, but then the manufacturing of it, once the initial cost is over, is just maintaining it because the wind is taking care of producing the electricity for them. And I don't know if you'll ever get them to admit that their costs have ever gone down, but I think that along the same line, if they're making good money, they'll continue to invest, and this will create jobs in people maintaining the towers and the generators and stuff. And these will be good high-tech jobs that'll pay what I call a livable wage. And I think just to create jobs for the sake of creating jobs really doesn't help. You need to create jobs that give people a livable wage that they can be out there, and then they'll stimulate the economy. Instead of just having enough money to survive, they might buy that extra TV set. They might remodel their house. They might add a garage. And this all puts people to work. And so when you have people making a livable wage, you know, $45,000, $50,000 is what I'm looking at, you're going to have people then that have a little extra money to do a little more. And so all these things together are things that are possible, but they're also going to come with problems that you'll have to deal with every day, and you got to be flexible to adjust with the situations. And who knows what information will come up in the future that what you think is right now might have to be corrected in the future because of new information coming to your attention.
Looking at some of the more county-based issues, one of them that's been talked about a number of times, there's a campaign going for it right now, a joint building for the Conservation and Health Department. Would you support putting more county money into that project?
Well, I was there at the board meeting when they proposed putting up $50,000 if they could, you know, raise $500,000. Whether they can do that or not, I don't know. I've been told by the health department that they really need something, that where they're at just isn't sufficient at all and isn't good. And so the conservation department I have not talked to, and I don't know specifically what their needs are and stuff. I do have one question on that, and that was when they come up with the figure of about $3 or $3.5 million to build this building, what are they building? What do you need that cost that much money, you know, and that's one thing I'd have to look into. Could you build a building to take care of their needs that doesn't cost near that much? You know, just a basic building rather than are they looking at something with more architects in it that, you know, costs a lot more. When you get into buildings with arches and just a lot of other things that are nice, they look nice, but they're just that. They just look at it. I mean, and they cost a lot more. And then I remember from my experience in the construction business when I was laying brick and stuff, every time you add a corner beyond four corners, you add a lot more expense. And a lot of these buildings that are drawn by architects have a lot of corners in them. They have a lot of arched windows and stuff in them. And the architect puts all these things in for looks where they actually serve no practical purpose at all, except that the higher the cost for the architect, the more money they make because their fee is based on the amount that the building costs to produce. So when you're looking at an architect putting together a building, they're doing it also for their own personal benefit because the more it costs, the more they make. So again, sometimes you can get a really nice building built that serves the purpose that doesn't cost near that much money.
Another of the issues that has always been talked about of late was the decision to reorganize, move the treasurer's office and the auditor's office to Fort Madison, the recorder and the assessor to Keokuk. I know that several of the, at least one current supervisor and a couple of the supervisors who are running have said they would like to see that reversed. If it came to a vote and said we're going to split them back up again, would you support that or do you like the idea of the consolidation as it is now?
I'm all favor whatever is best for the first district, which I want to represent, and then what is best for Lee County. I have already been down to the courthouse in Keokuk, and I took a tour of it. I was very fortunate to have Mike Short and Nancy Booten give me a tour, and they were kind of shocked when I showed up. They said, well, we didn't know that, you know, you were going to do this. And I said, well, I never made an announcement, but if I'm going to be a supervisor, I need to know what's going on. And I want to see what you people do down here, what's all consisted of and stuff. Because I already knew about the North Lee County building because that's where I take care of my business at. And I was very impressed with the way things were working down there and stuff. And so, again, I think before you can make a really informative decision, you need to have all the facts. And how much will it save? And the other thing is at what cost to the county people? And one thing that was explained to me why we ended up with two county seats in Lee County was when the two courthouses were built back in the 1800s, the main form of transportation was the horse and buggy. And it was a day's ride to go from Keokuk to Fort Madison or from Fort Madison to Keokuk. So to speed up the judicial system especially, they went to two county courthouses, which at the time made perfect sense because of the trouble of getting people, you know, on a long-distance move like that. And that has since, you know, changed when you can get there in a half hour. Either way, whether it's from Keokuk to Fort Madison or Fort Madison to Keokuk. So the main reason for having two courthouses was transportation. Now, the other thing you have to look at is that the courthouses are under the governing of the 8th Judicial District. And I think that the problem they have there is how much need is there for two courthouses because of the amount of litigation that goes on in the county. And so you would have to find out from the 8th Judicial District, if we went to one courthouse, could that actually handle the burden of taking care of all the court hearings, whether it's magistrate or district court? And we're supposed to be entitled to a fair and due process. And if you're going to end up waiting a year or 2 years to go to court because you don't have the facilities to take care of, you know, the part of the 8th Judicial District's problem, then that is something else that has to be addressed. And the prison is a big asset to the community. It creates a lot of jobs, but it creates a lot of legal problems that have to go to court. And so a lot of the court hearings end up involving inmates, which bottles up the Fort Madison building. So then a lot of the issues down in Keokuk are dealt with more domestic issues and more crimes, you know, committed, you know, to handle them down there. So you got all these different things that all have to be somehow worked out and coordinated to what is the best for the county and the people. When it comes to the different, you know, like the recorder's office, the treasurer's office, the assessor's office, the auditor's office, and all these offices and stuff, okay, go down and look and see the amount of paperwork that each one of these different places has to deal with. And if every citizen went down, they would be shocked, because it's a mind-boggling, because they keep that paperwork. There's paperwork there back, it goes back to the 1800s. And I asked about putting it on microfilm, and they said, well, they thought about that and they tried it, but the film gets bad or whatever. And then I said, well, what about putting it on disc? Well, that is another option, where we can photograph everything, put it on disc and stuff. But that's very cashy. So at what point do you balance that out? So there's a lot more to things than people realize when it comes to running a county and the Board of Supervisors and keeping expenses down. But usually, if you look hard enough, you can find a solution that is beneficial to both the employees and to the people of the county.
One of the key things that the county is responsible for are county roads and such, especially your district, very much county roads. Should the county consider, like some of the cities have done, and do a large borrowing plan to fix up streets? Or what do you hear? What do you want to see done with county roads, especially in the rural areas?
Well, this is what really surprised me when I talked to Ernie Steffensmeyer, who is the county engineer. And when he informed me that we had over 380 miles of county roads. Now, I'm not talking the state highways. This is just what the county maintains. Over 150 bridges that are maintained by Ernie and, you know, the county workers and stuff. And it's one of the largest miles of county roads anywhere of any county in the state. And so nobody wants to give up their county roads. They, like what's happened in Missouri. I've talked to guys down in Missouri where they say, well, they get theirs bladed once a year, and they get one load of rock a year, and if it needs any more, the local landowners have to put it on themselves and stuff, or if they want more. Many times in the wintertime, they might have to clean their own county road because the county doesn't even come and do it. I know one guy said there's only three people live on down his road, and they don't clean it regular because they said it just costs too much. I think that we can do better than that in Lee County, and that we have done better than that. Sometimes we don't get to the roads in a bad snowstorm as quick as some people would like us to, but eventually they do get to them. And I think actually they're maintained a lot better than people realize, because I've gone up into Henry County on their secondary gravel or secondary county roads, which are not gravel. They're a dirt road. And when bad weather hits, you just can't get down them, period. They're only there for fair weather. And a lot of people, you know, get upset about that because they might have to go around quite a ways because of that. And I think that so far, Lee County has done a fantastic job with as much as they have to deal with, you know what it costs or what it takes to clean out your own driveway. You know, imagine 380 miles of driveway to clean out, along with maintaining over 150 bridges, and you can kind of get a scope of the size of the project, and they have a tough job to do, but I think they do a remarkable job doing it.
Any other issues as you've been out and about campaigning that people have brought up to you that are on your radar, or any other issues you just want to mention that are on your radar?
Actually, no. I've been quite surprised. You get over in the Weaver area, all you hear about, you know, is the fertilizer plant. But you get out in the rest of the district, excuse me, their main concern is they think they pay too much property tax, and they'd like to see that more under control and stuff. But as far as service from the county and stuff, I never heard any complaints about it, you know. And so that really impressed me that, you know, maybe we do have a pretty good county here. The one big problem that the county has is the unemployment problem. And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of that is because of the prison. Now, you got roughly 1,000 inmates down there, and they have families and friends that want to visit them. Well, a lot of them end up moving to Lee County, so they're allowed so many visits a month, so they can go and do those visits. And a lot of those people that come and visit don't have a job. And then they have a hard time, if any time, getting a job, so they're counted on our unemployment base. So the prison is a blessing and a problem all in the same note, where it creates all these jobs that are good-paying jobs, but they also hurt us when it comes to unemployment. Excuse me.
When it comes to, and you mentioned it, the lowering of the property taxes, I mean, it really comes down to finding new revenue or making cuts. Obviously, if you bring in jobs, you're going to be bringing in the revenue. In the meantime, though, does it look into, I mean, does the budget need to be cut more? Is that how you would reduce, is that the way to reduce property taxes?
Well, anytime you look at a budget, and I remember from experience as being mayor, is that sometimes it takes a fresh person looking at something in a fresh, new, open eye where they don't have any preconceived ideas. I remember one of the first things I did when I was mayor, and we were looking at our street budget, and I noticed we had all this money for appropriated for replacing stop signs. And at that time, it was costing $75 to $100 to replace a sign, and we would do about 20 to 25 a year. And I asked the street superintendent, I says, have you ever considered redoing the signs and looked into that? Oh, he said, we were told by the companies it cost about as much to redo them as just buying a new one. So being employed at the prison, I knew Iowa Prison Industries did license plates up in Anamosa. So I contacted the business manager who contacted Anamosa, and could they redo stop signs with the reflective paint? And they said, oh, of course we can. And I says, well, what would it cost? Well, $15 a sign. And we had all these old signs sitting in the city shed and stuff. And wow, you know, why not just, all we had to do, and we go down to Fort Madison all the time, taking the recycling bin down there, and we have to do water testing and stuff, you know, for the water, because that was when we had our own water system and stuff. So we were making trips there anyway. Well, we took them down to the Fort Madison Prison Industries, and they have a truck going to Anamosa every day and coming back, and it didn't cost us any in transportation even. And, you know, you save $1,000 here and $1,000 there, and pretty soon you've saved some real serious money. And the big things usually are discussed enough that there's very little bit you can do. It's the little things that get just rubber stamped that if you look at closer, you can find a lot of savings. I remember when we got to policy administration, we got to the insurance part of it. And they said, well, Ron, there's nothing you can cut out of this department. And I said, well, that's fine, but let's go over it line by line. And we found a vehicle that we were carrying insurance on that we didn't even use anymore. It was actually junked, and nobody had caught it. And they all kind of rolled their eyes, and I said, this is why we go everything item by item when we get into this. Yes, it takes time. Yes, it's some kinds of pain. You know, you figure on going into a half-hour meeting, and it takes 3 hours. But that's what you should do as your job. And I learned this in business, too, that it's the little things that you've got to watch that can add up to a lot of money. And when you do those savings, my idea with savings is spend them if you have to. But if you don't have to, put them back in a rainy day reserve fund for things that may come up that you haven't budgeted for. And that way, if emergency comes up and you need the money but don't have it, rather than borrow it, you have it in a reserve, and you can save the taxpayers a lot of money but not having to pay an interest. I got nothing against banks, but you know, they have their purpose when you need them and stuff. But if you can save paying interest, you're saving money for the taxpayers. And so I'm always in favor of a very nice surplus. In fact, I got in trouble my last year as mayor in 92 when I got a letter from the state saying that West Point had too big a reserve fund for the amount of what our expenses were. And at that time, we had all our bills paid. We had no debt. We had paid off the lift station down at Archie's and stuff. And we had $325,000 in the bank. So I sent a letter back to the state showing where everything was appropriated for. If we needed a new backhoe, if we needed a new city dump truck, if we needed a new police car, if we needed a street sweeper, whatever. Everything in that reserve fund was allocated towards the replacement of that so that if it needed to be replaced, we could take the money out of the bank, we could buy it, we didn't have to borrow the money, which you end up paying then sometimes twice the time you pay the interest, and that's a savings to the taxpayers. So again, if you started running, whether it's a city or the county, like you would your own business, you can actually save a lot of money.
Probably the final thing, why are you the best choice to represent the first district on the Board of Supervisors?
I think there's multiple things here. I've gone through and explained all my experience and stuff, but I retired a little over 2 years ago from the prison. A little over 8 years ago, I sold my convenience store. Right now, I'm completely retired, running the Board of Supervisors. And being on the Board of Supervisors will be my only and full-time job. It won't be something I'm doing part-time where I have a full-time job because, you know, what you get paid as a supervisor isn't going to make a living. So by being retired and still having young enough that I have all this energy and all this experience, I feel that I can bring a lot to the Board of Supervisors by being able to devote all my attention as a supervisor for the people of the First District in Lee County.